Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Astrup et al. Titled, Inhibition of the Late Sodium Current Slows T-Tubule Disruption During the Progression of Hypertensive Heart Disease in the Rat. This article published online July 19, 2013. My guests today are Editor-in-Chief William Stanley, lead author Andrew Wasserstrom, and expert Guy Salama. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. Current treatment of heart failure is not particularly effective, and there's still high morbidity and mortality. New treatments with novel mechanisms are needed, and one potential target is T-tubule disruptions and abnormal excitation, contraction coupling, and calcium cycling, which has been shown in several models and even in humans with failure. Andrew, you want to tell us about your approach and the main take-home message of the study?
Heart failure is really extremely difficult to treat. And part of the problem there is that patients show up with such extreme disease. It's really hard to treat the disease when it's totally advanced. Our goal was really to look into the issue of what happens early during the development of the disease, because that's when really you need to intervene. You need to figure out what's going on. You have to understand what the problems are, both at the cellular, the ultrastructural, and at the level of cardiac mechanics, and then try to intervene. The question then arises, was this particular intervention, if administered over a three-month period, starting before disease becomes overt, is it able to stop or delay or slow the onset of the disease? It's been known for about 10 years that T-tubule disruption or T-tubule remodeling accompanies the worsening of disease during the progression of heart failure. The strategy is to inhibit the late sodium current, which has been shown to be upregulated in virtually all animal and even in human model heart failure. So what we found was that a three-month exposure by a chronic feeding of these SHR animals slowed the progression of the disease, both in terms of reduced hypertrophy, cardiac hypertrophy, and in terms of maintaining T-tubule organization. Therefore, the evidence is that there was reduced remodeling of T-tubules. This was associated with maintenance of cardiac function and less cardiac hypertrophy.
Great. So, Guy, what do you think then is the real exciting finding here? The idea of T-tubule disruptions established, and here you have a pharmacological mechanism blocking the late sodium current to prevent that. What do you think is the implications?
Andy, like all good papers, you bring out a result and raise many more questions. And some of the very intriguing questions is the underlying mechanism of T-tubule remodeling. And how does inhibition of the late sodium current or indirectly other effects on calcium plays into T-tubule disruption? In heart failure, there's also evidence of fibrosis, other ion channel remodeling. But in your paper, it seems that ranolazine successfully reverse T-tubule disruption without altering the expression levels of the critical currents that you measured, calcium, circa, RYR2, sodium calcium exchanger, or the sodium current channel itself. So what insights can you give us on other aspects of heart failure, and in particular fibrosis? Did ranolazine alter fibrosis? And how does sodium somehow, how is it involved in regulation and structural integrity of the T-tubules?
Well, those are really the central questions that were raised by the study and are ones that we've been pursuing recently. It is highly likely that inhibition of the late sodium current reduces intracellular sodium, and via sodium-calcium exchange, that will reduce the amount of diastolic calcium that is normally elevated in virtually all models of hypertension and heart failure, including the spontaneously hypertensive rat. So the result of this increase in diastolic calcium is that you get an activation of chemomodulin kinase 2, or CAMK2. And CAMK2 does many things in the cell, among them phosphorylation of sodium current, and this will in itself increase the magnitude of the delayed or the late sodium current. So ranolazine will not only block that current, but it will also decrease diastolic calcium and reverse this process. And that's one of the ways that we think that this strategy of late sodium current inhibition is one that could be potentially very useful in either blocking or slowing or even perhaps reversing the onset of the nastier parts of a cardiac disease that develop in the presence of a constant hypertensive stimulus.
That brings up the issue of how much of this really is the late sodium current, or how many of the effects that you see with ranolazine besides the late sodium current could be in play. It's a drug that's approved for chronic stable angina. It has some antiarrhythmic effects. What do you think? Are there other ways that could be acting independent of the late sodium current?
One of the reasons why ranolazine has been a bit perplexing is that if you look at its acute effects, these are not chronic experiments, and try to look at the indirect effects of ranolazine on calcium transients. So if it inhibits the late sodium current, you might expect a decrease in intracellular calcium, an effect in diastolic calcium, as Andy explained earlier, and also a decrease in peak calcium transients. And yet, it's hard to observe any of these effects of ranolazine in a normal heart. This is just a basic experiment where you look at the calcium transient before and after ranolazine. And yet, it has a great impact on arrhythmias, on long QT2. And this is mostly in the rabbit. And we use the rabbit primarily because it has IKR and IKS like the human heart. And it has also the transient outward current ITO. So in the ventricular setting, it's a perplexing observation that it doesn't have an impact on contractions and contractility in a normal situation. And so the role of ranolazine on RYR2 as an inhibitor of the leak of RYR2, and this is important, that it doesn't affect the voltage-triggered opening of RYR2, but the baseline leak of RYR2, which would then hide this effect in a normal heart. So you have to have a leaky RYR2 before you can detect the effects of ranolazine on calcium. The effects of ranolazine could be very valuable if it has a combination of late sodium current and a leak of RYR2. I think it's doubly more effective rather than less effective. And the relative impact of the two effects is difficult to dissect. And so you sort of have to use, I guess, computational approaches, but there are no simple experiments that will separate the two.
Guy, Andrew, thank you for a very stimulating and important conversation about the role of T-tubule remodeling and late sodium current. Kara?
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.